Rejoin me in prayer. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. The parable we heard today lives deep in our cultural and religious imaginations. I'm guessing that even if you've never heard the full thing before, you've heard someone at some point refer to another person as a prodigal. We all know what that means. Someone who's done something wrong, and despite these failures and misdeeds, they're welcome back again. So it is that today we meet two sons who couldn't be more different. The younger son takes half his father's life savings. The older son manages the remainder. The younger son travels to a far-off land. The older one stays home. The younger son is prodigal, reckless, a spender, wasteful and lavish. The older son lives within the frugal limits set by his father. These stark contrasts seem to be setting us on a path to make moral judgments. After all, that does seem where the story's leading us. It's prefaced with this reminder that the religious leaders of the day are whispering about Jesus' willingness to spend time with sinners. Not only that, Jesus is sharing table fellowship with these sinners, this intimate fellowship. What does this say about Jesus, about his morality and his character? So Jesus tells the story. After a debaucherous season, spending half the money his dad made over his entire lifetime, a youngest son returns home. He's hoping for just a shred of mercy, a job in what remains of his dad's business. But that's not what happens. Instead, his dad sees him from a long way off and takes off running. Before the son can get the apology out of his mouth, his dad has bought an ice sculpture and hired a caterer. No revisiting past harms, no need for explanation, no repayment plan drawn up. Let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. This would be a perfectly respectable place to end the story. Break out the cocktail shrimp. All is well. Except Jesus goes on. Because lingering in the barn, probably still sweeping the floor and putting up the seed bags, is Big Brother. The older son hears the DJ in the house and goes out to ask one of the house workers what the heck is going on. And the second act of our story turns the camera's focus here to Big Brother, hearing from a slave that his reckless, wasteful little brother is back. And not only that, this brother has also been given a new ring and a new robe and an ice sculpture. Big Brother is so angry with his father that he refuses to go inside the house. What moral decisions are we being led to make? One way to read this story is to see Jesus flipping the script. We have an expectation. The younger son is granted mercy beyond what he deserves. And so our judgment naturally falls on the older brother, who just doesn't get it. He can't fathom the mercy erupting around him. His younger brother is alive. He should come and rejoice. In the same way, we should choose to welcome others back as God, portrayed as the Father, welcomed the Son. We should not be like the older son. Who here is an oldest child? Who here is an oldest daughter? Okay. On behalf of all of us, I'd like to issue a formal complaint against this parable. Okay, maybe I don't want to go that far, but from my eldest daughter, Perch, I took special note of how this story ends. Our happy ending is complicated by the brother and the sort of rift in the family system. Or perhaps the return of the younger brother spotlights brokenness that was already there. Inside, a party is raging. The chocolate fountain is flowing, the cha-cha slide is blasting, and one person hasn't showed up to the party. The older son, the one who stuck around, who did what needed to be done, and the father notices. The restoration of one son has led to separation from another. And in our heads, we might map out a few possibilities of what could happen next. For one, the father could ignore his eldest son. He could let him stew in his rage. After all, this dad has been longing for this youngest son. Surely his older son knows that. Remember, the son doesn't come up and knock on the door to announce his arrival. The father has been apparently waiting with a pair of binoculars at the front door every single day, just in case this child comes home. Why should the father even bother with this immature behavior from his eldest entitled son? Or maybe the father gets angry. Whose house do you think this is? Your brother didn't throw away your money. He used up mine. If anyone has the right to choose to forgive, it's me. And comparing yourself to a slave, don't you think that's a little over the top? A little ungrateful yourself? We could even imagine this confrontation getting so bad that maybe the older son has to sleep it off in the barn until he can remember who's actually in charge of the household. Neither one of those things happens. Instead, for a second time in this parable, a father goes out to find his son. For a second time, a father leaves his house and makes his way to where his child is alone. And for a second time, he will try to bring his son back. This is actually the third in a series of parables that Jesus uses to explain why he's spending so much time with these people who are out of line with Torah observance. Just before this parable, Jesus tells the story of a shepherd who loses a sheep and he leaves these 99 alone and vulnerable to go after that one lost sheep. And the next story, a woman loses a coin in her house and she searches high and low all over. And when she finds the coin, she throws a party with her neighbors to celebrate. Something that is lost is found, and then rejoicing. And in the parable we hear today, we discover that there are two lost sheep. There are two lost coins, and there are two lost sons. One of the sons is lost to profligate living, but the other is lost to judgment. And yet the father cannot be whole, cannot actually fully rejoice until both his coins are found, until both his sheep are back in the flock, until both his sons come back into the home. So instead of ignoring his son or responding in rage, the father treks out to the field. And there the father corrects the story this firstborn has been telling himself since he was little. And that story goes like this. We are in a contractual relationship. I work for you, I obey you, I do what I'm told, and I expect some recognition in return. Ironically, the older brother reveals that he actually doesn't see his relationship with his father as one of family. He thinks of himself as a slave, as someone hired to do work. He is, in other words, lost. He's lost to a way of seeing the entire world, even his family life, is contractual, is a kind of storing up of debts and credits. At the time that this parable was written, it was a very big deal for a host to leave a party in the middle. For those in attendance, this would have been an act of dishonor. But for the second time in our story, the father takes on social dishonor for his children. He did it once already by welcoming a child back who caused shame. And now he does it by going to bring back a child who refuses an invitation. These acts of reconciliation are costly for him. And the same sacrifice he made for the younger child, he now makes for his eldest. And when he finally finds his son sitting in the field, arms crossed around his chest, a scowl on his face, the father rewrites the story of justice both his sons have assumed. Son, his father calls him, son, you don't work for me. There are no debts and credits between us. Our life doesn't work that way. We've always been together. That is the gift of this life, that we have cultivated and grown something together. And that's where the story ends. We don't find out what happens next. There's no resolution. We are left with this open ending. What will the elder son do? Will he stay outside, isolated in anger, but justified by the measure he set for himself? Or will he give up on contracts and repayments and enter the home of his father, that is his home, arm in arm? And so in this Lenten season of reflection and penance, those questions turn to us. What have we come to believe about justice and mercy, what we deserve, and about our relationship to God? Will we see that God has come out of the house, away from the party for each of us? Will we take God's arm? Will we let God bring us home? Amen.